Monday through Friday at this time, the Columbia Broadcasting System presents Service Time. Every Tuesday afternoon, this program is devoted to the men who sail the ships of the United States Merchant Marine. In cooperation with the War Shipping Administration, Columbia brings you It's Maritime. It's Maritime, a program dramatizing the history and color of the American Merchant Marine. This is the story of the sea, of clipper ships and schooners, of plodding convoys and liberty ships. This is the story of Maritime America. Today you'll hear about an American seaman who became famous for the heroic rescues he performed in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean. You'll hear an eyewitness story straight from an invasion in the Pacific. And there'll be music with Ensign Philip Lang directing the orchestra of the Maritime Training Station of Sheephead Bay. Yes, it's Maritime. This afternoon we play a march based upon authentic Russian melodies. It was originally written for a government broadcast saluting our heroic Russian allies. Morton Gould's Red Cavalry March. Thursday, March the 15th, was the 7th anniversary of the establishment of the Merchant Marine Cadet Corps. Since its founding, more than 6,000 young Americans have graduated from the Academy at Kings Point, New York. We salute them and their academy by by telling a story about a famous seaman, Captain Giles C. Stedman. In October 1925, the freighter Ignacio Florio was plowing through a heavy storm in mid-Atlantic. It had been a bad day for the Italian ship. A steering gear was gone, and a first mate had broken his leg. Now it was almost midnight, and the ship was in worse difficulty.
Capitan Lauro! Capitan Lauro!
Yes, what is it now?
Water is coming into the engine room.
Did he get into our cargo?
Not yet.
If it does, it will ruin all that grain we took aboard in Philadelphia.
Our cargo started to shift in the hold, Captain. All the lifeboats have been smashed by the storm.
It is hopeless. Completely hopeless unless somebody answers our SOS.
Through the night, through the storm, went the SOS. To the south, 161 miles away, was an American ship, the liner President Hardy.
What is it, Sparks?
I've just picked up an SOS, Captain Grenning.
On a night like this, that's not surprising. Let's see it.
Here you are, sir.
I require your service to save life. We trust only in you, and we cannot remain long on the ship. All our lifeboats are broken. Signed, Captain and the Yellow Laurel. Did you get the position of his ship?
Here it is, sir.
Tell him we are proceeding to his assistance.
Through the storm, the President Harding plunged to the rescue of the stricken ship. At daybreak, there was still no sign of the Italian freighter. Messages went back and forth.
Have you any rockets? We are firing rockets. You see them? Do not see them, but hang on. We are coming.
Impossible to proceed. First officer has leg broken. Second officer washed overboard. We will abandon ship. You are now in sight. Get ahead. Hold on.
President Harding lowered a small lifeboat, but it was smashed against the liner's side. A second boat was launched and capsized. It was then that a slim youth, Chief Officer Giles Stedman, volunteered to command a third lifeboat. Manned by other volunteers, the lifeboat headed for the sinking Italian freighter. The waves were so high that at times the lifeboat seemed to float in midair above the freighter. The next minute it would crash down out of sight in the trough of the sea.
Aim that gun higher. Let's shoot the line right across the deck.
Yes, Mr. Stedman.
Ready? Let her go.
That made it. They've caught the end of the line. They're making it fast.
Now we'll be able to get them off.
The crew from the Italian freighter jumped into the sea, one at a time, clutching the line from the lifeboat. One by one, they were pulled out of the water to safety. And for his heroism in this rescue, Chief Officer Stedman received many decorations. By 1933, Captain Stedman was master of the liner American Merchant. In January of that year, his ship encountered a violent storm in mid-Atlantic. And out of the storm came an SOS from the British freighter, Exeter City. Captain Stedman gave his orders for the American Merchant to go to the rescue. His orders were followed, and the crew of the Exeter City was saved. When the American Merchant landed the survivors in New York City several days later, Captain Stedman received a hero's welcome and was presented with numerous decorations, including the Navy Cross. The hero of these two famous sea rescues was also executive officer aboard the naval transport West Point, formerly the liner America, when she evacuated 900 women and children and 500 naval personnel from Singapore in the early days of this war. Then in May 1942, Captain Stedman was assigned to the Kings Point Academy as commandant of cadets midshipmen. On October 15th, 1943, he was appointed superintendent of the academy. And so today, we salute Commodore Giles C. Stedman and the United States Merchant Marine Academy at Kings Point, New York. They are doing an important work, training young Americans to become officers in the United States Merchant Marine. Here's a song that is in its second childhood. First written nearly 15 years ago, it is currently enjoying a popular revival. Petty Officer Tommy Mercer sings, Confessin'.
I'm confessing that I love you. Tell me, do you love me too? I'm confessing that I need you, honest I do. Need you every moment, in your eyes I read such strange things. But your lips and eyes, they're true. Will your answer really change things, making me blue? I'm afraid someday you'll leave me, saying, can't we still be friends? If you go, you know you'll grieve me. That you love me, dreaming dreams of you in vain. I'm confessing that I love you over again.
About an ocean-going cook who was famous in the days of clipper ships. Petty Officer Tony DeLeva sings, Sail Away for the Rio Grande.
Our cook, he is a very dirty man. Sail away for the Rio Grande. He cooks the food as dirty as he can. Sail away for the Rio Grande. He stirs the tea with the end of a rope, and in the bread we found a piece of soap. Our cook is a very dirty man. Sail away for the Rio Grande. Our cook, dirty man, sail away for the Rio Grande. He cooks the food as dirty as he can. Sail away for the Rio Grande. Every sailor gets his fair peck of dirt. He boiled up pudding in the tail of his shirt. Our cook, he is a very dirty man.
A story straight from the invasion of the Southwest Pacific. This is a first-hand account of one particular action, witnessed by Lieutenant John A. McCauley, overseas correspondent for the United States Merchant Marine in the South Pacific. It all began when an Australian plane flew over some of the small Pacific islands occupied by the Japanese. This was one of those Australian bullfighter planes that the Japs call Whispering Death. You can hardly hear their approach. They fly so fast that the sound of their motors follows behind like a whisper. Whispering Death. The bullfighter is a heavily armed plane carrying 6 machine guns and 4 cannon in the wings. This particular plane was piloted by Flight Lieutenant Nick Smith from Hawthorne, Victoria. But out of gas, the bullfighter came down on dry sand and slid up a small inlet, not more than 10 yards square. Here, the two flyers abandoned their plane and made their way across the island.
No sign of any Japs?
This silence gives me the creeps.
Here's someplace.
Hadn't we better get back to the plane and radio the base where we are?
We can't do that.
Why not, Nick?
We can't send out our position. The Japs would pick it up and come after us.
You mean we're going to be stuck here?
I don't think there's much chance of our repairing the plane. We've no spare parts or... Hello? What's this?
A house. Right in the middle of nowhere.
Get your gun out. Maybe some sort of a trap. We'll take a look, but careful, does it?
This place is deserted.
Furniture broken. Nobody's lived here for some time.
Here's a medicine bottle.
Let's see it.
Look, there's a name on the label. Mrs. Brown, 1941.
Mrs. Brown. Say, this gives me an idea.
What?
I think we can get word back to the base without giving our location away to the Japs. Come on, back to the plane.
Captain, we've had a radio message from Flight Lieutenant Smith.
Huh? What's it say?
Here you are, sir.
Thank you. Mrs. Brown lived here in 1941.
I don't understand it, sir.
Well, it's very simple. Check all the records of inhabitants on all the islands around here in 1941. Find where a woman named Mrs. Brown lived, and you'll find where Smith's plane came down.
Records were checked, and the location of the island plotted. A United States Navy rescue boat set out for the spot.
This is the location. These islands ahead of us.
Yeah, but which island? They're so small, we've no way of knowing.
Not any sign of life.
We'll have to search both islands. Put a party of 3 men ashore on this first island, and we'll go on to the second.
3 men were put ashore, and the rescue boat moved on to the next island.
Have to be careful here. We may strike a reef if we go in too close.
No sign of... Wait. I see something on the beach.
Looks like a wrecked plane.
There are 2 men running on the sand. They're waving to it. We found them!
Lieutenant Nick Smith and his observer were saved. The small rescue boat put back to the first island to pick up the party of 3 Navy men who had gone ashore. As they approached the island, there was no sign of the rescue party.
They must have gone into the underbrush looking for you, Smith.
Oh, sir, I hope they don't run into any Japs. They're all over these islands. They dug slit trenches.
Hello. Here comes one of our men now.
Something's wrong with him.
He's fallen into the sand. Look, he's trying to signal. He's warning us to keep away.
The Japs have got.
Here they come. Let's get out of here.
The few men aboard the small rescue boat had no chance against the Japs who held the island. They could only go back to their base and report what had happened. It was decided to send a larger force of men back to the island. 2 PT boats went out, one with a second lieutenant and 6 U.S. Army Alamo scouts who were picked to go ashore and hunt for the 3 men. Another PT carried RAAF mechanics who would try to salvage the plane from the other island. They arrived at their destination at 2 in the morning. The Alamo scouts pushed off in rubber dinghies and vanished into the darkness, heading for the island where the 3 Navy men had landed. The lieutenant kept in touch with the scouts all night by walkie-talkie. When dawn finally came...
No sign of the 3 missing Navy men. We've combed the island, but... Hold on.
What's wrong?
We've been spotted by a Jap patrol. Looks like 25 of them. We're going to have to fight our way back to the beach.
Minutes that seem like hours later, The scouts broke out of the underbrush and onto the beach. They got into their rubber dinghies and started paddling out to the PT boat.
There come the Japs across the beach. They're firing at those dinghies. I'll take them. Here comes a plane. A plane! He's sweeping that beach with fire.
Boy, look at those Japs run!
And here is Lieutenant John A. McCauley in person to tell us the rest of the story.
We pulled the seven American scouts aboard the PT boat to safety. They were half drowned, so the Japs had put a hole in both their rubber dinghies.
Well, had they found any trace of the three missing Navy men?
No. They reported that there were at least 1,000 Japs on the island. Those three fellows hadn't had a chance. The PTs shelled Jap installations. The plane was salvaged, and we watched it take off toward its base as we sped out of the Jap stronghold to safety.
Well, tell me, Lieutenant, why did you take part in that operation when there were no merchant seamen participating, no merchant ships involved?
I was following up an operation that was very much dependent on the merchant marine. A few days before, our merchant ship had stopped at an island PT base. We unloaded a cargo of supplies, ammunition, gasoline, spare parts, torpedoes, even PT boats themselves. In fact, everything at this base was brought in by merchant ship.
The merchant marine means a lot for Pacific War, doesn't it?
It means everything. I have seen lend-lease farm machinery brought to Australia by our cargo ships. That same machinery, working in Australian fields, turned out 90% of the food eaten by Australian and Yankee soldiers in the whole Southwest Pacific campaign. I've seen some of that same food unloaded off one of our ships, brought up by barge to starving Australian commandos. Then I've seen those isolated commandos fight all the way from Wario to Fortification Point.
Lieutenant, what about munitions and shells?
I rode our B-25s in the first raids in Rabaul. They plastered the strongest Jap base in the South Pacific in the face of intense ack-ack with bombs brought to them by merchant ships. I saw howitzer shells carried off the first American merchant ship in Leyte by Negro duck drivers and fired at one of the most important objectives in the whole Leyte campaign. I watched our infantry walk cautiously up that objective, Hill B, which dominated the whole Leyte Valley, and find nothing but dead Japs killed by those shells.
Leyte was one of the toughest jobs the merchant marine had in the Pacific, wasn't it?
The toughest. Many seamen were killed unloading their vessels. Those who were wounded would always ask when they could get back in the fight.
How do the men of the armed forces in the Pacific feel about the merchant marine?
Everywhere I went, I sensed a feeling of dependence on the merchant marine. General MacArthur summed it up better than I can when he said, "They have brought us our lifeblood, and they have paid for it with some of their own."
The year 1927 marked the premiere of a nautical musical comedy with melodies by Vincent Newman. They're almost 20 years old now, but they've aged mighty well. The name of the show was, of course, Hit the Deck, and one of its top tunes was Hallelujah. Liberty ship at the dock. She's full and down, ready to sail. She has vital supplies and equipment aboard for our forces overseas. In her holds are tons of shells and projectiles, an airplane landing mat, 116 jeeps, 5 cranes, 6 diesel engines, 154-ton-and-a-half trucks, 328-two-and-a-half-ton trucks. There are tons of medical supplies, tons of spare parts for tanks, tractors, and airplanes, pneumatic tires, food and canned goods, field telephones and equipment. And on deck are 16 two-and-a-half-ton trailers and 4 steam locomotives. Did we say she was ready to sail? Well, not quite. The vessel lacks a chief engineer. He can't pull up anchor until one signs on. All of these supplies, all of this equipment is urgently needed at the front. But it will have to wait. A ship can't sail without a chief engineer. If you are a licensed engineer now working ashore, there's a ship that needs you right now. Licensed mates and ABs are also needed. Now is the time for you to return to sea. Wire collect to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. Give your name, address, rating, and when you'll be ready to sail. Don't delay. Help put the supplies and equipment overseas where they're needed. Wire or write Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. You have heard It's Maritime, one of a series of service time programs which is brought to you every day, Monday through Friday. It's Maritime is presented each Tuesday afternoon in cooperation with the War Shipping Administration. The music was played by the orchestra of the United States Maritime Training Station of Sheepshead Bay under the direction of Ensign Philip Lang. Join us again next week when it's Maritime. It's Maritime is written by Vincent McConner and directed by Earl McGill. Tomorrow, Service Time, in collaboration with the United States Army, will present Wax on Parade. By the way, Joan Brooks, Columbia's singer of romantic melodies, can be heard 5 nights a week, Monday through Friday, over your CBS station. So make it a date to listen to Joan Brooks, the girl with the voice you won't forget. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.